gentlemen. Welcome to this episode of the Corner Store Podcast. We are without our beloved co-host in the building tonight, Tar Mahadevan, who really wanted to talk to our guest tonight, is out on, she's not feeling well, you know. And so we miss her dearly, and I know she was super excited to talk with you, and so is a big fan of our guest's work. Our guest tonight is a beautiful photographer and art director, curator, someone who I think really understands the frame and I think is challenging what to put in it. There's I think that there is a center of your work that is about really questioning who should be in the frame. And I think Arundhati Roy talked about there's no such thing as the voice of the voiceless. There's only the deliberately unheard. And I think part of your work is about bringing the margin center. And honored to have our guest in the Corner Store tonight, a photographer, Glenda Lissette. Welcome.
Thank you so much for the introduction.
Of course. Thank you. Thanks so much for being here. Max has offered you beverages already.
Yes.
This evening.
Water, thank you.
Water, good.
Hydrated,
excellent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every podcast episode that we do is sponsored by Stolen Spirits. And so I'm enjoying some whiskey and ginger ale.
Nice.
But you're good.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, very good. Max, in addition, though, has also gotten you some snacks and some gifts. So just to begin with, some Lay's dill pickled flavored potato chips.
Oh, thank you.
So I hope you, and feel free to enjoy those now. If you wish, you can share them, you know, with the folks we have here. Also, he procured you some mini Swedish fish, which is a fat-free food. I didn't know that, but it proclaims it.
Wow,
on the,
thank
on the bag.
You. I'm mini, so this is good.
Okay, good. And then also a Hubert's lemonade, only the best will do, original lemonade flavor. So, you know, enjoy if you want to add that to your water.
Yeah.
Glenda, thanks so much for being with us, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Excited to have a conversation, and very curious about where you come from.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I kind of have a hard time answering this question because I've actually moved a lot in my life, but I was born in Chicago, and I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, so I lived in Melrose Park and moved around a lot. And then when I was like 8 years old, I moved to Guatemala, and then I lived there for a while, moved back over here, lived here for a while, moved to Baltimore, lived in Baltimore for a little bit, then I moved to Guatemala, back Guatemala City, and I lived there for a few years, and after that I moved to Phoenix. And after Phoenix, I made myself back over here.
It does not stop. So,
yeah.
The question, of course, is why were y'all moving around so much? And who is, this isn't just you solo,
no.
I imagine, as a
no.
child. You're like,
no.
Yo, I'm ready to go back.
But kind of, at
yeah.
certain times I did, like when I was in Arizona, I was living without my parents.
Yeah.
So there were some times, but it was mostly at first my mom and dad. And then when I was 8 years old, my parents actually got a divorce, and that was in Guatemala. So after that, it was just me and my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My folks got divorced at 8 as well.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. And now, do you have siblings?
No, I'm an only child.
Okay, so it was really you and your
yeah,
mom.
Yeah, it's really lonely.
All right, so you went back to Guatemala, though. So you were in Guatemala when your folks separated
yeah,
at 8.
At 8 years old.
Is both parent or is any parent Guatemalan? Who
they're both born raised in Guatemala,
but
so
you were born here.
I was born here in Chicago,
okay,
yeah.
First generation,
yeah,
okay. And they moved once. You remember things about Guatemala,
yeah,
being that
very
young.
Very vividly,
yeah.
Yeah, so when I lived there the first time, it was really great because we got to live like on this little mountain right across from like all these trees, and I had chickens, and my dad used to do like rooster fighting, which was kind of wild.
Yeah,
actually,
very wild.
Yeah, and then we also had like a little store that I used to help tend, so I would like give alcohol to a bunch of drunk men and have really great conversations when I was 8 years old.
At 8, yes.
Yeah.
Listen, yeah.
And then my dad also used to like do a lot of wild shit. So he would have like boxing matches and I would get in there and punch boys in the face. And then also just like a lot of parties. So we, you know, danced a lot in the community. Like it was just like a really fun time. I have a lot of good memories. Obviously, like, it ended very abruptly and bad, but I still cherish, like, the good memories I made there. Yeah.
But you, so you went with your mom. Is that when you all came back?
So, like, I went there with my mom and dad when I was 8.
Right.
But came back, like, just with my mom.
Right.
Pretty much, yeah.
Right. And so it came up. And you, that's when you all came back to the city or the suburbs?
We moved to the suburbs. Okay. Yeah. And then.
And what did moms do? What did moms do? Your dad was involved in all of this.
So my dad and my mom both have had, like, a lot of different types of jobs. My dad has actually worked at the same factory here since, like, his whole time since he came here to this country. So he's always worked at the factory, like, gotten a lot of injuries there. Like, it's a lot of manual labor.
What does he do?
I'm not quite exactly sure, but I know it's, like, has to do with building mechanical parts for things. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
And my mom has just done, like, a lot of different types of jobs, like office jobs. You know, there was a while where she was cleaning rich people's homes and worked at car dealerships. Like, she's just done a lot of different things to get us ahead.
Right.
And always trying to, like, give me the best education that she can.
It's incredible the your parents grind.
Yeah, you know, they, like, grind.
What they're willing to do.
Yeah.
In order to
especially
have you
my
be,
mom.
Yeah, yeah, sounds like it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you my dad kind of checked out there, but
true.
But yeah, my mom, like, really was my mom and my dad when I needed her to be.
Are you all close, you and your mom?
Yeah, like, in high school, we kind of had a rough relationship. We used to fight a lot, but at this point, like, we're really good. Yeah.
Where did you go to high school? Where did you end up going to high school?
So I went to high school partially in Arizona and then also in Elmhurst. So it was York High School.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I know that school well because I played high school basketball.
And oh, really?
You all had a very big, I think, Christmas tournament, like the York Holiday Classic or some shit like that. But
yeah, I wouldn't know.
Fair.
I didn't do sports.
So, right. So what kind of kid were you in high school? And I also imagine that kind of moving around made it difficult to, maybe I imagine, to have any one consistent group of friends least.
Yeah, like, moving around, like, I always had to make new friends and kind of reinvent myself everywhere I went to try to, like, fit into wherever I was.
Right.
But
was that hard to do
that?
Yeah,
it was very hard, but I had no choice.
Right, yeah. Right, it was your normal, exactly. Which makes it then not, I mean, because, I mean, that is a normal for many people, but I imagine, like, I mean, I moved around a lot as a kid, and so I went to, you know, I had, like, I think from the time my folks split, I lived in, like, 9 to 10 different places from, like, 8 to 18 or something like that. And so moving place to place, you always have to, like, meet new folk in the neighborhood. And, like,
meet the,
like,
new bullies, yeah, exactly. Dodge everyone. Yeah, it's like,
yeah. Yeah. So in some ways that can be difficult, but if you know how to do it, then you know how to do it too, right? But in high school, what were the kinds of things that you were into?
So, like, it was kind of hard making a transition from, because I, like, went to middle school in Guatemala. So I went to, like, an all-girls, like, Catholic public school. And then, like, when I moved to Arizona, it was, like, a totally different community. And then when I moved back to Elmhurst, I'd never lived there. But when I moved there, it was just totally, like, cultural shock. Because, like, I come from, like, a lower-income background. And that community is primarily, like, wealthy white people. So it was kind of, like, hard to make friends and to feel like I belonged in the community.
Percentage of Latinx folks?
Like, what? None.
None, yeah, okay.
None. And especially Guatemalan, which is what I am.
Right,
like,
not heavy, yeah.
No, so it was kind of lonely, and I think, like, the internet really helped me to, like, feel a sense of community.
Yeah, how so? I've heard this a lot, particularly, I don't know how old you are.
So I'm 24.
Okay.
Yeah.
So folks, because you, I mean, the internet has been the majority of your life, really.
Yeah.
So how, in what way did you find a kind of community in the internet? In what spaces or how?
Mm-hmm. So when I was, like, 15, I started uploading my work to Flickr.com, which is kind of dead nowadays, but at the time it was, like, a really big deal.
Yeah.
And I used, 'cause
Instagram has kind of replaced Flickr in some ways,
right? Some ways for me, yeah, like, as my way of sharing my work.
Right.
But yeah, like Flickr was cool because I got to connect with all types of like photographers and loners and weird kids from across the country. And I actually like ended up making trips to like Oregon and like just meeting up with like 40 strangers that I had never met. So like it definitely like brought me out of my comfort zone, and like it was just cool to collaborate with like people just from the internet in real life.
Yeah.
And then it kind of died off because these companies just get bought out or just get like horrible management and kind of ruin the platforms for artists. And then artists just like don't want to post anymore, and then they can't really share their work anymore. So I've kind of like jumped around from like platform to platform. I feel like every time I join a new platform, I work really hard to gain an audience. And then like the platform kind of, you know, murders itself and makes it really difficult to share my work. So then I have to start all over again on a new platform, and that just keeps going on and on and on and on.
Well, I want to talk about platforms and certainly where you're currently posting, but I want to go back a little because you said at 15 you're posting to Flickr. So and you're posting your
self-portraits. Like
that's
when I like really started.
Okay.
Seriously. And
how did that begin? I mean, how did you get involved in picking up a camera at all? Mm-hmm. And then I have a question about even the focus on the self, which is very interesting. But let's, you know, first, how did you get a camera?
So my mom bought me my camera for my birthday.
Is that what you wanted, or she's just like, yo?
No, I was bugging her so long, because like when I moved to the States, I really wanted to make art, and like I decided like, okay, I want to start taking photos because I got really into like documentary photography. So I really wanted like a camera.
Well, how did you get into documentary photography?
Just from like looking online, like going on like websites and like just looking at photography.
Do you remember some of the photographers or pictures of what, or?
You know, I can't really remember any specific photographer or anything.
But what were you looking at? I'm curious about the frame or the gaze in which you were perceiving, and what
I've always taken photos. Like even when I was a kid, like I took photos on like disposable cameras, or like I used to take like cringe selfies from MySpace and then take them into Photoshop, and like, you know, starting to plant the idea of like photoshopping a lot of things into my photos. So I kind of like over time became more interested in photography. And then when I moved to Elmhurst, you know, I had the opportunity to take art classes, which was something I hadn't had the opportunity to do really up to that point. So it was like, okay, I can actually take a photography class and learn some stuff. So I need a camera for this upcoming school year. Like, mom, please, please, please. So she got me like a cheap entry level camera, which in
the
end,
do you remember what kind?
It was a Nikon D40. And then I ended up taking a film photography class. So I didn't have enough money for a film camera. And then the teacher had to like let me borrow one. So I got introduced to photography like in two different ways, like one digitally on my own, just like experimenting in Photoshop, and then also like learning film photography, like in a darkroom setting, which was very different.
And why the self-portraits from so early?
So early on.
Yeah.
I think part of it was like loneliness. I didn't really have friends. So like when I first got my camera, like I literally had no friends. So I would just go outside in nature, spend time there and take photos and just create scenarios for myself, and always adding like a surreal element to my photos, like very different than what I was actually experiencing in my life. But
yeah and that's
like therapy.
And these things interesting and these things stay present in your work now, it seems.
Definitely.
You've invited many other people into the frame, and we could talk about that, but that the notion of self-portraiture, of surrealism, your color palette is incredible, you know, and so it you see a through line then from then until now in some ways too. You know, I don't know if you get this often, and I apologize if this is an annoying kind of analogy, but there is something similar about, or akin, I would say, in conversation with the work of Frida Kahlo, self-portraiture, in obviously different mediums, but also like utilizing techniques of surrealism, of color, to also, you know, lift some of what is inside of your frame too.
Yeah. I do get that a lot, actually.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure.
No, I understand. Like,
although she's why, dope as fuck, so.
Yeah, she's dope as fuck. She was, like, one of my first, like, heroes and one of the first people that, like, really pushed me to, like, be an artist, too. So, yeah, I mean, it's a compliment.
Yeah, right, yeah, certainly. And, yeah. And I mean it as such. But so, all right, so from 15 to now, where do you go to school for photography later?
So then I moved to the city and I went to University of Illinois in Chicago, and I graduated in 2018. Hey, so congrats. Now we're out here.
Congrats.
With a degree from, I got a BFA, so a Bachelor of Fine Arts.
Okay.
Art
History Department, is that?
No, it's Studio Arts.
Yep.
Fine Arts.
Yep.
And then I primarily did video stuff in school, though, like, not photography.
Okay.
So yeah, that was just like what I wanted to do, what interested me. I really wanted to make sure I wasn't just learning the same stuff and I was expanding my art practice into other visual mediums. So
we, you know, this space is mm-hmm. is really for creatives from multiple genres, and we get a good mix of people who are formally trained, who are not formally trained. I think a lot of our listenership are, you know, artists or, you know, potential artists who think about what is the next step in their own education and development. What was that experience like going to, you know, a formal educational space to learn how to do video work, to enhance your art practice? What can you say about that rigor or that experience?
It was hard for me to get to the point of like actually going to school, because when I was in high school, like, I had this idea that I would go to the Art Institute because everyone told me, like, hey, you can do whatever you want, like, you can go to any school you want. So I was like, okay, that's the place to go. So I applied and I didn't get in, and that like completely shattered my heart.
Oh wow, they're salty now though.
They're mad now. I literally didn't understand that there was no way I could ever afford something like that. So it just doesn't even matter. I'm good.
And UIC's art programming is outstanding. You know, like they have some really great.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Things.
So I went to COD, and then I actually ended up taking a year off of school too because I was like, I was against school. Like, I decided school was not for me. Like, I just wasn't going to get anything out of it. And I had so many friends who were, like, succeeding in the art industry without school. So I was like, that's what I got to do. Like, I hate school. But then I talked to this professor at COD who was like, yo, you need to go to UIC. Like, you're way too good. Like, you need to be doing more. You need to be dreaming bigger. And I was like, all right, let me look into this. I looked into UIC. Loved the professors there. So I went, and it was a really good and bad experience, you know, like, as a Guatemalan artist, like, obviously there was like a lack of representation completely. Any artist that related to like me didn't really exist in that space. So I had to kind of do my own research, find out my own history. But you know what, like, it still helped me a lot. It really enriched my practice. It really pushed me. I don't think I would be able to be making the work I'm making now if I didn't go to school and have people like really push me and challenge me and question what I was doing and force me to answer like questions I didn't want to answer.
Did you move to the city?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I feel like part of your work, in viewing it, is also about a community.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder about, yeah, obviously you have the educational space of UIC is mm-hmm. a community, but I wonder how you found your way, because it seems just from looking at the socials and mm-hmm. also who is in the frame of your work, that you've developed a community of creatives, of artists, mm-hmm. of folks who, you know, help motivate, push you to make work, support your work.
Mm-hmm.
What was your foray into building your own creative, supportive, artistic community in Chicago?
It really was UIC. Like, I feel like that introduced me to so many Chicago artists, like Oscar Chavez. Like, he's like a really good friend of mine, and I really, really love the work that he's making, and I think it's completely underrated. But I really relate to like his work, and also honestly, like, social media has been a way for me to connect with the people in my surroundings in such like magical ways.
Well, let's talk about some of those ways, and let's talk about the platforms that now that you are excited about finding mm-hmm. finding a home for your work in. What are some of the, what is, obviously,
yeah, Instagram. I mean, Instagram is obviously like the primary way that I'm sharing my work right now. And I really want to change that this upcoming year because I'm very like frustrated with the platform.
How so?
As an artist. Yeah. Because like, there's so many reasons that I could talk about this forever.
Well, speak on it though. Yeah. Because I fancy myself a very faux photographer, and mm-hmm. Instagram has allowed me and probably like millions of people to like think that they and their camera can like make some hot shit. I really just document graffiti and street art, and I'm just a fan of the documentation. Mm-hmm. But you are someone who is putting up, you know, these very beautifully curated, detailed, meticulously detailed photographs that you, I imagine, make elsewhere and then transfer over to this platform that is a populist platform.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So why are you frustrated with it?
Like, I woke up this morning at 4 a.m., you know, started editing my photo, edited it all day long. Like, I just get up and I start making my work.
Do you normally get up at 4 a.m.?
Lately, I've been getting up pretty early, yeah. Like, my sleep schedule is just wild. Like, sometimes I stay up all night working and sometimes I go to bed really early and then get up and just, like, start working. But you know, I work all day and I post my work online, and then just the algorithm sometimes work against me so much and don't really push my work out there to the people that want to see my work. So that's like the frustrating part, because like, as an artist, all I want is for people to see my work. That's it. Like, not getting enough likes or whatever, like, that obviously affects everyone emotionally, but you know, also it affects me in my career, because if people aren't seeing my work, like, how am I going to do this? You know, because this is the primary way of showing my work. And then other than that, like, you know, I have a problem with like the design of Instagram. I have a problem with the creators of Instagram. A lot of the creators of, you know, different types of social platforms have, you know, done so many things to really harm their users intentionally, to get them addicted to this platform, to get them hooked on the validation, on the likes, on the endless scrolling, on the numbers. All of these things are design tools that are used to fuck with you, to fuck with your head and get you addicted to this. So
that's our culture right now, in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
like, that's just where we are at as a society.
Yeah.
Where we, I mean, I just took some of these platforms off my phone
in order to
just gain a little bit of clarity, control. Space, control. Yeah. Right. And you know, too often, mm-hmm. One of the things I've tried to re-up on is my own reading patterns, you know, mm-hmm. and I've been a very serious reader throughout the majority of my life. But I think once I had all of this shit on my smartphone, so-called smartphone, which makes me dumber by the moment, you know, like, I feel like I've needed to take some of those joints off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I need the headspace.
I delete Instagram like all the time without telling anyone. Like, I just delete it because I need it. Yeah.
But at the same time, for you, right? I mean, someone who is, you know, still relatively young.
Absolutely.
Someone who has a very rapidly growing fan base. I mean, you're getting love. Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, right.
Yeah,
right.
I'm so thankful and appreciative of all the love.
I'm curious about like the body of work that is, I don't know if it's most recent on your IG, but mm-hmm. you've been getting a decent amount of attention for it. These series of portraits that have, I just saw them somewhere. It's essentially, you're kind of queering the lens, queering the frame. And I mean that in the sense of the most progressive, my most progressive understanding of queer theory is that, you know, you're challenging whatever is the heteronorm,
mm-hmm.
and who you're choosing to put in the frame is kind of certainly doing some of that work. If you could talk about that recent ish body of work.
Are you talking about The Home We Carry, or
Kaina was in one of these?
Kaina, yeah.
So and Pigeon, and there were other folks who were in this body of work.
Mm-hmm.
What is that project?
So that project actually was kind of done in collaboration with Red Bull. They approached me for their Red Bull Music Festival as like an extension. They wanted to give me a space, and I thought, you know, since I'm a visual artist, like, it'd be really cool to get a bunch of creative people from Chicago and collaborate on like a photo series. So, you know, it wasn't my intention to make anything queer or anything, but like I'm queer, so like I guess my work ends up being that way. But yeah, like that was just a fun project that I'm probably going to be working on for a few years.
Yeah, how so?
Yeah, just taking more photos of different people and expanding.
And is that has that
project itself too? But
has that changed the way you think about your work at all?
Not really. Mm-hmm. I shoot a lot of people, and I always have shot a lot of people. I think for me, it's like I intentionally like to shoot myself, and I think sometimes people think that's like not photography or not as serious or it's narcissistic or whatever, but I tend to push against that and like really challenge other people's perception of like their work. You know, everything you make is a self-portrait. Everything you do is a reflection of yourself. And if you don't think so, then you're lying to yourself.
That's a bar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've also thought that there is something about this obsession with the self that can be actually, but it could also be very powerful, given, I think, some of the things you mentioned earlier about, you know, if you feel alone, if you feel different than, you know, your immediate surroundings, your peers, you know, people use the selfie as a form of self-care.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I don't know if that is part of the reason why.
You know, like my selfies and my self-portraits are like blurred at this point for me. Like every photo is just so charged with like different energy. Like sometimes it's a reflection of myself. Sometimes it's me feeling good. Sometimes it's literally me creating characters out of my body and using my body as a tool to make versions of me that aren't really necessarily supposed to be me. So like it's hard to like just kind of box the type of self-portraiture even within one thing, because I use it for like different ways.
Absolutely. Yeah. So can we talk a little about the creative process?
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing other things right now? First and foremost, do you have other gigs? Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm going to be working on a big like, music video film. So that'll be pretty exciting. And yeah, like I'm just always taking photos, so there's always new projects coming.
And so just on a day-to-day basis, what does the creative process look like for you?
Get up, panic.
Panic? Why?
Panic?
Why?
Because I have to make my photo, so I'm like, I'm always
do you
like,
make a photo is that
yeah
you make a photo
that's
a
my
day?
Goal right now. Okay. I've been trying to make a photo every single day, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. I like that. Okay, so you panic, you freak out.
I freak out, yeah. And then
because you're like, what the fuck am I gonna shoot, what is it gonna be?
Yeah, various reasons, but yeah, pretty much. Just,
okay. And
just,
then once you get that out of your system,
yeah,
what happens?
I post my photo.
Oh, so
you... I post my photo.
I feel like there are many steps.
And then I start my day. No. no, I don't know. There's not like one specific way that I work. Like I feel like it just kind of depends on my mood, you know?
And what tools are you utilizing?
It's just my phone, my camera, my tripod. I have two lights I use, and my laptop. That's it. And my tablet. So.
And you do you use all of those as a lens?
Yeah, I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like my photos don't really come to life until I put them on my computer and edit them.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, like, yeah, that's a lens.
And what camera?
A D7000. Wait.
D800.
I forgot my camera. Yeah, D800. It's time for an upgrade, but
okay,
it works.
That's what's up.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you know we are just in the beginning of a new year.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the you mentioned the video?
Yeah.
What are some other bodies of work that you are excited about, thinking about doing, working on, already in the midst of, can be seen in this coming year?
I can't talk about it.
Okay, all right.
You'll see.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to be working with some cool brands, some cool musicians, and just more personal projects. My goal is to get myself into a studio so I can just, like, amp up my process, my practice, and really just grow.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. And yeah. I mean, I'm excited about the personal work. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, first and foremost, because I think that's what attracts the brands. That's what attracts mm-hmm. the musicians. That's, you know, once you do your work as an artist, everything else will come.
Yeah.
So how do you stay motivated on a day-to-day basis other than panicking to do the work of making each day? Because that's something that's very yeah. hard to do.
Yeah, I have a lot of breakdowns. And that crying helps. Like, I think crying is very, like, therapeutic.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I like writing. I like drawing. I like engaging myself in other art forms because I don't take them as seriously sometimes. So, like, it kind of relaxes me to just kind of doodle a little bit. I like going out for walks, just spending time in nature. I think nature is always going to be, like, my biggest source of inspiration. So just being outside, like, reminds me I'm a human. And then nothing's that serious. I'm tiny, and everything I'm doing is just for fun. So there's no point in, you know, freaking out about anything.
Being a Chicagoan in nature can mm-hmm. sometimes be difficult.
Yeah.
Although there is...
You really can't find it.
But there is also like it's an there. Abundance. It's it is there.
It's there. I look for it. I find it and no one else is ever there.
Right.
It's just me and my camera and this guy.
I don't want you to give your most intimate spaces mm-hmm. if you don't want other mugs there. But like, yeah. like what are some of the spots that you find yourself in or where you find solace out in the city being someone yeah. who, you know, nature is so much a part of what yeah. you need. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say my favorite spot. Year-round is Northerly Island, and I love like the idea that it's this like man-made island that is just being reclaimed by what Chicago originally would look like. So when I'm there, it kind of gives me an idea of like what all this land used to look like before it was colonized, you know, before all these huge buildings were here. It's just a great space because you can see all the birds, all the natural wildlife. It's just really nice and inspiring. And I take a lot of my photos there.
Mm.
Yeah.
It used to be Meg's Field, right? You know that story when Daly like took it over in the middle of the night?
It was an airport.
Yeah, it was an airport. Yeah, yeah, it was, used to be Meg's Field and yeah. You know, the younger of the Daly,
mm-hmm.
You know, kings, I guess, like mm-hmm. In the middle of the night, you know, shut down the airport. X'd out the space and yeah, it became this I kind of like faux natural habitat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someday it'll be a forest.
Hopefully, right?
Yeah, there's baby trees all over.
Hey, right. Yeah. Which yeah. would be, and it's interesting. I mean, because we have shifted the taste of the country from, you know, suburbia back to urban space, and there's mm-hmm. more people in, you know, cities than there ever have ever been in some ways in this country, to think about what the future of the cities will be, and hopefully it will be more green space.
Yeah, hopefully.
But we need it to need be it. In order yeah. to survive, probably.
Yeah, to survive, to heal, to thrive.
Yeah, yeah. So your practice seems to be somewhat in the service of also self-care. I wonder what other things you do to maintain your head, you know, mm-hmm. to and your heart. You know, what are some of the other things that you do for yourself in order to be able to make on a regular basis and give in that way, you know, because that giving is, you know, you expose yourself, you know?
Yeah.
So what are some of the other things that you do to take care of yourself?
I like playing video games.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
What video games you play?
I really enjoy playing my Switch.
Okay.
So I like playing Zelda and just like Mario games, like cute games that, you know, I can escape in. That's really like, just in between editing, like, or whatever, if I get, like, overwhelmed, like, I'll just take out my Switch, play a little bit, de-stress. And also just, like, talking to the people that like my work helps me understand what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. You know, talking to, like, younger folks who feel lost and who feel confused and, you know, they're, like, poor and brown and feel like they can't make art. Like, having those conversations with those people, like, really gets me going and like makes me feel like, okay, like this is important. I need to keep doing this and I need to keep like, yeah, I just need to keep making these things, even if it feels like, what's the point sometimes? It's like, no, there's power in this. You know, I'm helping a lot of young women, a lot of young brown women, a lot of young Guatemalan women. Yeah.
Facts. Do you think about audience when you create?
Yeah.
And is that who you're primarily trying to communicate with?
I think, like, I don't even have a choice. Like, I just, that's just who is attracted to my work. So, yeah.
Well, I'm not a young Guatemalan woman.
No, but I mean, I have all types of people that follow me.
Yeah, so it's
really great. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that is powerful, right? Mm-hmm. Like, representation is a real thing.
Talking to people where it's like, okay, this was me like a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you ever think about teaching or anything? I mean, because you teach in those conversations you're teaching, but do you ever think about...
Yeah, I would love to teach more photography classes to like youth and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But, well, it's very exciting the work you do. You'd mentioned painting and things like this. Some of that appears in the photos themselves, mm-hmm. right? So it's almost a mixed media.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? More of that in the future?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
More illustrations.
All right, exciting. And where can people find your work on the internets?
Yeah, so Instagram at Glenda Lissette. It's two S's and two T's. And then I also have a YouTube channel, and I upload like vlogs and lookbooks, that kind of thing. And some photo stuff too. And then I also have a Twitter. So that's pretty much it, yeah.
And what is it on Twitter?
It's at Glenda _ I don't even know my Twitter. You know what? I'm not even going to say it.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I don't
yeah.
know. You but can IG. Probably search my name and
okay.
then I'll show up.
Bet. And on the YouTube, that's a space for your video work.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what can people expect to find and look forward to finding on the YouTube page?
More like style, thrifting tips, more like about my life, I guess, like my everyday life. Yeah.
Right.
Just
so
fun.
You kind of do
just
it all.
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
He makes the music. Chris Vanelli sitting right next to me. He's a filmmaker, but he makes all the music for my lookbook. So, like, you know, original scores on all the little films, which is pretty cool.
Bet. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's great having you in the corner
Thank
store.
You.
And,
so
you know, we are big fans of your work. I know Tara wanted to be here, but also is a giant fan of your work. And, you know, thanks so much for rocking.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate you. Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the corner store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the corner store at corner_pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the corner store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.